for listening, folks. Remember to support your local independent bookstores, your independent reading series, and independent radio. Thank you. Good night.
Boo.
KBOO Portland. It's 11 o'clock. This is the Sudden Radio Project from August 27th, 2007. We picked out an old show for you to listen to, so just hang on a second.
You can tell me about your escapades, the story of your lost decay. Don't be a stranger, a stranger no more. Don't be a stranger, just knock on my door.
Wow.
He's going to do the man. Yeah, good
These
idea.
Are just so loud. The headsets.
They really are.
Yeah, they're just like crazy loud.
Oh, okay. Wait. All you had to do was ask.
Oh, they're crazy fucking loud, man. Do something.
How's this? Is that better?
Don't just lie there.
They're kind of noisy, too.
No, that's good. Good.
Okay.
Yeah, that's much better.
It's you know, livable. I'm all about making you happy, babe.
Yeah, because it's all about me.
Yeah.
Now I want to fight with this.
Bit of a southern accent. Can you
Horatio.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do.
Okay.
You have to remember Horatio to tell his story.
I must tell his story.
Not yours.
First, this letter to me. Horatio. Okay, anytime? Okay, at my leisure.
You are tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. It's the final hour of the final Monday of the month. Time for another edition of the Sudden Radio Project.
Are we ready? Roll tape.
Thank you.
Where you going, boy?
I ain't no boy.
Then my eyes playing games. Where are my glasses? Glasses nearby somewhere. When I go home again without them, my missus gonna skin me alive.
Then serve you up for prayer meeting.
That so, young'un? You sass like a boy.
Don't you be touching me, old man, or I'll get my daddy to whoop you something fierce. And I'll get my brother to chaw on your hand like a dog at bone. He at that age where the fangs in his mouth coming in sharp. He at that crying age. I'll get my brother so you don't feel that temptation in your blood.
Long tough talk for a girl. I still say you a boy.
I can run faster than you can reach. Your glasses, they be on your old gray fuzz, you old dark drunk.
Well, right smart of me to put them there. Besides, I have me a fierce devil of a thirst.
Yeah, right smart. Can't you feel them none?
I ain't felt nothing since afore the Great Depression.
Which one?
The one where my sweet Bessie took sick in childbirth. Left me with a youngin' to raise I knowed nothing about raising.
So it died? I asked you, so it died? So what you do? What you do, sides drowning yourself?
About what?
About raising your youngin'.
Raised the best I could. Ain't that enough?
Dunno. I'm too young, I reckon. My mama, though, she's not young, and she gets the depression, it seems, on and off, off and on. Don't know when it's coming, can't see it coming. She don't tell me. She just likes some fierce storm that don't know its own power. She like that heat lightning what comes out of nowhere in the summer and leaves just as quick. Like that. Can't see it coming, don't see it leave. She like that, my mama.
You gonna tire yourself out before you turn 13.
Hey, how you know that? Just how do you know that? You a conjure man, old man?
What are you going about, child? Who be stuffing that nonsense into that wild hair of yours? That will come from no schooling. No proper schooling.
I've been to school. Some school. Where you been to know how old I am, huh, old man? Tell me how you know, and I'll give you back your eyes.
You at that age when things start to change on your body. Any fool can see that. Any blind man can smell that.
What you mean, old man? You mean to say that I... 'Cause if you meanin' that, I'd be obliged to...
No meanin' given.
Then you're a cruel old one.
This be cruel, young, and life ain't had its way with you yet, has it?
What I know is I startin' to bleed. Ain't that something what has its way?
You shush your mouth, girl. Hear talk of that between what dark and what white? They marry my neck to a rope.
But we talking about life.
We talking about blood. You hush your mouth. Hush your mouth or I'll hang for it.
Seems you already hanged yourself for something way before I come along.
It's a plague world for little things. A plague world.
You thinking about your own youngin', ain't you? You thinking...
You thinking about shutting up out there? Well, that's more like it. Quiet. Peace will come later.
Well. Low. The children have a hard time when mother is dead, Lord. Father, let children have a hard time for the dead. Well, I have anywhere to go, one dead around from door to door. Have a hard time.
am freezing my kazoobies off.
Sam, don't go queer on me.
I ain't going nowhere, Luke. It's a word my three-year-old made up.
And?
It's the part of your body that gets cold first. Pretty smart for a three-year-old, huh?
You raising a fucking poet?
Kid's smart. I want to keep him smart.
Well, if someone don't come up for a smoke soon, you'll have to send your kid to the pub schools. You sure you unlocked the door?
I checked. I double-checked. They're way backed up in clinic. It's Monday. People are rolling in.
I did all my goddamn work. I can't come up here and get in line.
You're gonna want to smoke sooner or later.
For everything that I... Ugh, it's cold out here.
What did I tell you?
You remember how we rehearsed it?
How many times have we done this, Luke? I mean, this is my gravy train, man.
Where's your...
backpack.
What are you waiting for?
Just came up for a smoke, gents. They're backed up till doomsday down there.
Yep, that's why we're here. They just called 7. I'm 42. My friend here is 59.
42? 59? Damn cold up here on the roof. Weather's changing. Never used to be this cold in June in Portland, and I've lived here all my life, except for 3 tours in Iraq.
2 for me and 1 for my buddy.
I don't get it. All this money for the war, but nothing for them who fight it.
It's a bitch.
Damn, it's cool. You fellas want a nip?
I'm parched.
That makes 2.
Well, they'll want the window that he crashed into replaced pretty soon, don't you think?
Be about 40 hours overtime, I reckon.
We're the only ones in this hospital who know how to install the damn thing.
And don't get sick at the sight of so much blood.
It's just a shame it's so close to the clinic and folks have to see the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, that extra cash will sure come in handy. My kid's graduating from high school. Them cap and gown gizmos, they don't come cheap.
The world's gone too green, man. Way too green.
Well, better get back to the shop before they miss us.
Same time next Monday?
Yep, same time. Clinic B, over by the canteen. That should put the cream in some people's coffee. Hopefully the weather will change and it'll be nice. I'd hate to catch a cold and miss out on all the overtime these jumpers put in my pocket.
Luke, they're technically not jumpers. We give them a little hand.
Just a little.
What time is it, honey?
1:15 when our guest should have arrived.
Oh, stop.
You can set your watch by those two, provided you set it 30 minutes ahead.
Are you going to change out of your curmudgeon before they get here, or are you going to get your grump on for the rest of the evening?
Haven't decided.
I don't know why we invited them over. I knew you were going to say that.
Am I that predictable?
I'm afraid so.
In that case, I'll allow you to act as my representative in tonight's transaction while I retire to bed. Would you look at that? My watch is 10 minutes slow. Give them my best, will you?
Answer the door, you silly man.
Lord have mercy on my soul.
Hello.
Sorry, not interested.
Horace!
What?
Let them in!
We'll pretend we're not here.
You just open the door.
Nobody home!
You're ridiculous.
There are people dying in here. Go for help and don't come back!
Fine. I'll get the door.
No, I'll hold them off. You escape via the balcony.
I'll go down fighting, thank you.
Suit yourself.
Hi!
Hi! Horace, you card.
That was quite a welcome. He sure knows how to roll out the red carpet.
How you doing?
Supercalifragilistic.
Nice to see you. Thanks for having us.
Mind if I use your microwave?
Honey.
Your 5-star kitchen facility so I can prepare the super sophisticated appetizers we brought.
Certainly. Follow me, Emerald.
Let's kick this party up a notch.
Thank you.
How are you this evening, Mrs. Jesus Christ, what the hell are you doing?
Nothing yet.
Are you trying to get us caught?
The risk turns me on.
All this time I thought it was me.
I suppose you might have something to do with it. I want you, Horace.
I want you too. Unfortunately, right now is a bit inconvenient.
Then when?
Tonight. Afterward.
Midnight?
Yeah.
Same plan?
Same plan.
We're not falling into a rut, are we?
The risk hasn't gone away.
I hope the reward hasn't either. Date?
Date. Would you like a drink?
Of course. Make us something strong. Can you handle that?
I'm getting used to it.
Honey, could you come help your friend figure out our Jetsons brand appliances, please?
It's not that hard.
If you have a PhD in physics, maybe.
Guard my drink.
I'll stay out here where I won't be splattered with testosterone. How are you, Lise?
Just fine, thanks. Cigarette?
Ooh, you sure know how to tease a girl.
Trying to quit?
Again. Ha! You know me too well.
What's the motivation this time?
My mate's messianic anti-tobacco crusade.
Really?
Yes, it came completely out of nowhere. I mean, he was never a smoker, but he wasn't above partaking socially or in bed.
We do that. I mean, Ron and I do that. It sort of punctuates the experience, you know?
Yeah, I don't understand what's with him lately. It's like someone took a blender to his essence.
A metaphysical margarita of a husband? Sounds intriguing.
Not if it's mostly ice.
I don't know why you just don't unplug and replug.
That's dumb. It should just work.
It's temperamental.
It's defective.
The hors d'oeuvres are cooking.
Yum.
Oh, Grace, you have to try my new remoulade recipe. It's amazing.
Bring it on, baby. I dig a hot chick that can cook.
Call me old-fashioned, but put women in the kitchen and they're as happy as lovers.
Wouldn't surprise me if they were lovers.
I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I don't think Grace swings that way.
You sure?
That's what she tells me.
Well, that's one less person my wife is having an affair with.
What are you talking about?
Don't be adult. You know damn well what I'm talking about.
I'm not sure that I do.
Oh, come on. You think a filly like that is going to hang around the stable?
Fine way to talk about your wife there, friend.
Always playing the prude, aren't you? Bet you always wanted a little on the side. Am I right?
What are you getting at, Ronald?
Would you do her, Horace?
You're my friend.
Your best friend.
My best friend, right.
Would you?
I...
You were thinking about it.
No, I...
The pause gave you away, buddy.
I paused because...
Because you were thinking about it. You were. Honestly, I'd be offended if you didn't. Call me a braggart, but I have an extremely hot honey. Do I not?
Well, from a purely disinterested perspective.
Disinterested? Are you gay, old fruit?
If I were, perhaps you'd stop asking these outlandish questions.
Am I making you nervous, Horace? Jesus, if I didn't know better, from the look on your face, I'd really think you were fooling around with my wife.
Ronald, I assure you, I would never betray you like that.
Relax, my friend. You think I'm actually suspicious of you? Ha! My God, you'd slit your wrists after a week with her.
Yeah, I probably would.
Besides, why would anyone want to have an affair with some stick-in-the-mud stay-at-home type? No offense.
Oh, none taken, I'm sure.
People fool around to escape boredom, not further submerge themselves in it.
Or as an escape. Do you honestly believe she's being unfaithful?
Oh, I don't have any proof, or even any grounds for suspicion, really. No whiffs of unfamiliar cologne, no hurried hanging up of the telephone, no unexplained late nights at the office. But nevertheless, I just have this feeling. I can't explain it.
Perhaps you've grown paranoid in your old age.
I prefer to think of it as man's intuition.
Oh, darling, this is going to come as a shock, but our schizo kitchen needs some more therapy. Do you mind?
Go on. It'll give you some quality time with your paramour.
Very funny. Here I come to save the day.
You look quite lovely tonight, Grace.
Thank you. Horace bought this dress for me. Well, actually, I bought it, and he reimbursed me.
How romantic.
He is, in his way.
Do you love him?
What kind of question is that?
Innocent.
I hardly think so.
Answer it anyway.
I feel the way I've always felt toward him. Warmth, comfort, companionship.
Passion.
I'm not 19 anymore, Ronald. I don't measure the quality of my marriage against some unattainable Hollywood illusion of happily ever after.
I'll take that as a no.
You may take it any way you like.
Evasion is still your primary defense mechanism, I see.
You act as if you're still in love with me.
I feel the way I've always felt towards you.
Passion?
Yes.
What about Lisa?
What about her?
Being your wife, I thought you might perhaps feel some warmth and companionship toward her.
Maybe that's not enough for me.
What is? She's a wonderful person, not to mention gorgeous, not to mention a dear friend to me. But to you, she's little more than some kind of fashion accessory, a diamond-studded albatross around your neck.
I never should have left you.
But you did.
Help me! Help me! I'm being poisoned with delicious food. Somebody please eat it before I die.
Allow me, I have nothing to live for.
Hey!
Oh, well, except for you, my love.
You know, I'd kill you if you died on me, you fool.
A fool for you, honey.
Before I expire, I propose a toast to health, to life, and most of all, to love.
To love.
To love.
To love.
Cheers!
Pick up after your dog. Hey, Sarge. Krakalukowski here.
Krakaloo, you need a nickname.
You do that, and my mother will be on you like a pig in poop.
Still can't say it, can you, Krakaloo? What are you afraid of? The word ain't gonna bite you.
My mother's right here.
Hello, Mrs. C. Sorry, Mrs. C.
I'm on a community ride along with my daughter.
Finally decided to see how the other half lives, eh?
I don't like it.
Love to chat with you, Mrs. C, but we have poop perps to catch and miles to go before we sleep.
I didn't know you read, Mr. Sarge.
I'll pretend I didn't hear that, Mrs. C.
Can we socialize later? I have a major pooper here.
How major?
Oh, it's a big dog, Mr. Sarge. So it's a rather large deposit he just made on the taxpayer's lovely clean beach.
What's your location?
Cannon, south of Haystack.
Want backup?
You're embarrassing me in front of my mother, Sarge.
I ask only because... because last month we had that unfortunate incident in Neatarts.
That was foul. But I don't think so, Sarge.
Why don't you take that nice backup, Mr. Sarge, offered you, dear?
Ma, let me do my job.
Did you read the poop perp his rights, Crackaloo?
He's advancing toward me now, Sarge.
Oh, dear. Isn't that the ugliest pit bull you ever saw?
Crackaloo, let me send backup. Remember that pit in Lincoln City?
Nah, Sarge, I got it under control. Besides, I got a new issue Motorola, Zapstar, Mobile, Zinger Boot to toot the pooper with Taser. The latest in perp poop control. I don't think this turkey or his dog will get very far.
It's your call, Crackaloo. I'll stay on the line.
Oh my, that dog is ugly.
Look at the owner, Ma.
I didn't hear what you said.
I said, pick up after your dog.
I don't have anything to pick up after him with.
A little awkward with your sentence construction, but I can't write a ticket for that. Here's what I can cite you for.
Are you for real?
Ma, he wants to know if I'm for real. You hear that, Sarge?
Crackaloo, I'm sending the wagon.
Got it under control, Sarge.
I don't think she has, Mr. Sarge. You better send that wagon.
You're in cahoots with those Greenpeacers last week who said the same thing.
Oh, dear. This is not a first-time offender, Sarge.
You're yanking my chain.
I know my daughter looks like a pushover, but last week in Neatarts...
Ma?
Yeah, you're a cop, and your mother's a championship rodeo rider.
I just love the cowboys, mister. I'm not foolhardy enough to ride one.
Ma?
Wagon's on the way.
Sir, you do not want to be walking away during this part of the arrest, or I can add another violation.
I'm just out for a walk with my dog.
Who you didn't clean up after?
Oh, watch ending a sentence with a preposition, dear.
Ma, sometimes even Strunk and White end a sentence with a preposition.
What are you two broads on about?
Wrong thing to call a police officer.
Can you read English?
What, do I look like a foreigner?
Because if you can read English, then you're aware of the rules for being on the beach sign that's posted there where you came onto the beach.
Why don't I just bury the shit or throw it into the ocean? Will that work for you?
Sarge, we have us here a live one. So in addition to littering and not picking up after your dog, I can add assault to the earth. You know that carries quite a hefty fine.
Look.
Don't you look me, mister. I asked you nicely to pick up after your dog, and you refused.
No, I didn't.
We have it on camera.
Ma, please keep quiet. Sir, I will ask you again. Will you pick up after your dog?
And I told you, I don't have anything to pick it up with.
Sir, if all you had going for you was common sense, you'd know that you should bring a pooper scooper with you wherever you go.
Wagon ETA is 2 minutes.
There's no wagon. You work for Al Gore, don't you?
I work for the Oregon Coast Poop Patrol. You want to add resisting arrest?
I saw a toddler once playing in the sand, and she scooped one up thinking it was chocolate.
Ma, let me do my job.
By the time her mother realized what she had eaten,
Ma.
This man lacks common sense, and he has an ugly dog to boot.
Now you're insulting my dog.
Sir, I have asked you twice now to pick up after your dog.
And I have told you twice.
I forgot to tell you, as required by law, this conversation is being recorded and transmitted to police headquarters as part of your record. I also have a picture of your dog doing the deed and another of you walking away.
Is that legal?
My daughter knows her business, which is more than I can say for you and your dog.
Not only is it legal, it's evidence. It's clear you do have something to pick up your dog's poop with, but won't.
I already told you.
You have your shorts.
Oh dear, we're not going to see naked flesh again, are we?
Well, Ma, he has a choice. Sir, do you want a choice?
Even if I could, I don't have anything on underneath.
Then you write him up for indecent exposure.
You're kidding me.
No, sir, I am not. When they issued you a dog permit, you were also given a list of do's and don'ts. I see you don't have your dog muzzled.
Oh, brother.
Oh, that should be oh, sister, mister.
Are you sassing me, sir?
He's been a badass sasser since he opened his mouth.
So, for the record, and before the wagon gets here, this is what you're being charged with. Poop in a public place by a dog. Refusal of dog's owner to pick up said poop. Disregard of muzzle laws. Resisting arrest. Refusal of dog's owner to use own clothing to pick up poop.
Can't legally use that last one, Crackaloo. We'd be accused of entrapment.
I have my Swiss Army knife. He could cut a piece of his shorts.
I'm not doing that.
Then we have what I said, minus the indecent exposure, and I'm adding intent to do bodily harm to the ocean.
It's a big ocean.
And where does it stop?
The ocean can hold a lot.
That is neither here nor there. And what am I arguing with you for? You refuse to pick up after your dog. You're going to get what's coming to you.
You can't arrest me for that.
Oh, yes, she can, sir. And for the difficult and arrogant time you gave her, you have my permission, Crackaloo, to rub his nose in it.
Really, Sarge?
Yeah, see how he likes it.
Oh, this is my favorite part of the job, Ma. Oh, dear, I don't want to see this.
Sir, for the last time, are you going to pick up after your dog?
What are you giving him another chance for?
It's called benefit of the doubt, Sarge. Sir, for the last time, are you going to pick up after your dog?
And for the last time, I don't have anything to pick it up with.
You have the right to remain silent. You have the right to an attorney.
You can add disturbing the peace. I heard the barking all the way from the turnoff.
Okie dokie then, adding disturbing the peace.
Sir, I'm going to have to take your dog.
Nobody takes my dog.
Sir, I have to insist.
No one takes my dog.
Use the taser, Crackaloo.
I'd do it sooner rather than later, Chrissy.
You called me Chrissy, Mook.
I can't say your last name with a straight face anymore.
If you touch me or my dog with that thing, I'll have my attorney.
What's his number? I'll call him, and he can meet you at the station.
Mook, please taser the two barking asses. The noise is hurting my ears. Next time, maybe he'll think twice about letting his dog poop and not have something to scoop it up with.
Ma, hand me a plastic bag.
Make sure you smear the poop on his face so he wakes up to the smell. And cuff him.
Should she cuff the dog, too?
A woman after my own heart. Let him deal with the poop and his dog yelping in his ear when he wakes up and can't move.
Seems a bit like the Gestapo.
Have you seen the numbers, Mrs. C? The effects of poop in our oceans, rivers, and streams? It goes into the water table. You end up drinking poop. That poop carries parasites. Those parasites compromise our immune systems. The poopers must be punished.
Well, ain't this our lucky day? There's another pooper perp 100 yards down the beach. Chrissy, you want that collar?
Okay, I'm off. Ma, you stay here. I want to do this on my own.
All right, dear.
Chrissy, will you... I mean, after your...
We're burning daylight here, Mook. What already?
Will you have dinner with me again tonight?
Christine Louisa May Alcott Krakalukowski. A date? Since when?
Ma, my personal life is my business.
About 2 months, Mrs. C. I think your daughter's the cat's pajamas. The bee's knees. Nice to meet you.
As long as you use protection, dear.
This is too much information for me, Crackaloo. Go arrest the bad guys. Mook, get this bozo and his dog into the wagon.
Sarge, they're really ugly. Both of them.
Take pictures. We'll add them to the ugly perps of poop wall.
2 months, you say?
The happiest 2 months of my life.
Where did I go wrong?
Excuse me?
I did something terribly wrong that my daughter ends up on the Oregon Poop Patrol.
Oh, Mrs. C., if you only knew how passionate Chrissy is about the environment. She cries in bed.
She wept for 3 days when the Exxon Valdez leaked.
That's what I mean.
I still have to ask myself, where did I go wrong?
With what?
She always loved to play dress-up.
Chrissy?
My little girl.
Well, she's all grown up now.
She never liked getting dirty, and her brothers took turns getting her dirty. I used to bathe her sometimes 3 times a day. They got her so dirty. I was a single parent, and there was Chrissy always in her pink pinafore.
Mrs. C., Sarge, still here. I have one thing to say, and then I'll let Mook do his job. You've got a daughter to be proud of.
She's rubbing poop in that man's face.
Chrissy loves her work, Mrs. C. No more nightmares about her brothers.
But she's rubbing poop on his face and smiling about it.
Do you know that this beach is a much nicer place to be now? Why, when I was in Santa Monica, California, that beach had needles, condoms, food wrappers, diapers, bear bottles, and poop galore. You couldn't walk barefoot. Do you see any needles or diapers, Mrs. C?
But head wrangler on the Oregon Coast Poop Patrol. Where did I go wrong? Where did I go wrong?
December 8th. I had a letter from Margaret today. She sent it to Chanji, and when we checked into the backpacker hostel today, I got it. She must have gotten her trek schedule from my brother. Lord knows I didn't give it to her. Or maybe she got it from the Nepalese government. It's a matter of record. Every backpacker must submit an itinerary at the start of their trek. In our case, at Besi Sahar. So that if we fall down a mountain or get taken out by an avalanche and our bodies are never found, they can presume us missing to the U.S. Embassy and our families. Wise enough, I suppose. They can just leave my body in the goddamn ice for all I care. They'll never miss it at the office. Margaret's letter asked if we were going to stay in Kathmandu 1 week or two. Long enough for Christmas, that's what she's getting at. Of course, the answer is, it depends on how soon I can force myself to go home. That's why I never tell her where I'm going to be. Who needs these questions? I didn't come thousands of miles for these questions. Chamji is gorgeous. All shimmering light, green tiers of rice plants, the sides of every mountain curved with tier upon tier, water trickling down from one layer to the little plants below. Behind, the white peaks of the Annapurna Mountains are jagged against the ice blue sky, surreally close. The farmers hang prayer flags in the fields to help the plants, and the flapping scares the birds, so I guess the prayers work. The birds look like blue jays, but like they got the wrong color at the developers, it came out kind of green instead. Paul and David bought some chicken stir-fry with rice and chili from a roadside vendor on the path coming up the mountain to Chanji. Although usually pretty good, this time it smelled off. Greasy, not quite right tasting, kind of gray colored. I ate one of my precious Cliff Bars instead. Pays to be a wuss sometimes. Paul and David are now really feeling it. They're in their bags in the hostel now, and I don't think they'll be well by morning, when we're supposed to go hiking again. And that's what I've been saying. That's why I stopped eating that damn chicken. Which sometimes means just not eating. That's the menu up here. Chilies and oil and chicken and eggs and more chilies. Oh yeah, and chai and yak butter tea. Ugh, yak butter. Well, the chai and the rice are good at least. They know their rice in Nepal. I've lost 15 pounds on this trip so far, but at least I'm not throwing my guts up. The chili-induced ring of fire, as they say, is bad enough. I'm going out. There's some kind of sound outside, like women chanting. December 9th. It's a festival here, a big one. Now I seem to remember something about it in the guidebooks. Biba Panchami. I didn't realize I'd be here for it, though. The book says it's a festival of the marriage of the hero Ram and the princess Sita, as told in the epic Ramayana. King Janak, Sita's father, proposed a test of strength for the suitors of this daughter, to string the great bow of Lord Shiva. Warriors, kings, and chieftains came from all over, but no man could even lift the bow. Ram lifted the bow with ease, and when he tried to string it, the bow shattered into pieces. Ram and Sita were married in Janakpur, now in southern Nepal, and they still celebrate the marriage every December. What that means for me is that I get to see a giant Technicolor wedding party for the next week. Such a big fuss over a damn marriage, like it's some kind of sacred event. But to these people, I guess it is. Not much else to do in Nepal but fall in love and get married and plow things, I suppose. That's the third world for you. Chamji's too small to make too much of it. None of the huge elaborate processions they're probably having in southern Nepal right now and in the bigger cities, but it's still interesting. I took a bunch of pictures from a respectful distance using my telephoto lens. Weighs a ton in my pack, might as well use it. Idols of Ram and Sita were brought out in a procession. Real people dressed all in elaborate shimmering gold and pink cloth. All huge heavy earrings, shiny headdresses, braided locks. They wear so much makeup they look like dolls, perched solemnly on a sedan chair. The young woman looks down with a kind of detached, smug expression. Typical princess, I guess. It must be the honor of her life to be chosen to be the sacred bride, Sita. Not much after this but oxen and making babies. The young man looks kind of spacey. Maybe they had to slip him some loco weed to get him to marry the imperious princess. People in the procession murmur this sing-songy chant while draping him with yellow flower garlands. Good luck, bucko! Another backpacker told me that the big party comes at the end of the week. Of course, we'll have moved on by then. I'm sure Paul and David will have worked out the worst of the food poisoning. It's the Nepal weight loss plan, and it can work for you. December 10. Still in Chamji. We were supposed to leave today. It's been raining all day. It is the rainy season, after all. What passes for here, anyway. David felt well enough to eat a little today. Maybe we can start on the trail to Bagha Chop tomorrow morning and still make it back to Kathmandu by Christmas. I ate some rice today with him and some eggs. The eggs make me nervous, but you can see all the chickens running around, so the eggs must be fresh, right? Because of Biba Panchami, the kids are having a great time. They couldn't seem to give a damn about the wedding, but they've taken the opportunity to have their own little kite festival here in Bastan Chamji. Kids have come from miles, I guess. They're clogging the main dirt road through town, now a mud road, trading kites, fixing kites, painting kites with giant eyes, birds, and Hindu gods. The kites make a whistling sound when they steer them in the sky, and the children sing flying songs in rounds. One group of children singing, the other group layering their song over it, over and over. So beautiful and hypnotic. When the rain let up a little, I laid on the hill by the rice fields. With my glasses off, it was just streaks of colors floating through the intense green of the rice fields. I bought a kite from a grubby little kid in town. It's really kind of odd, but pretty. Small, bright yellow with spiraling purple eyes and a tail of multicolored streamers. I wasn't going to buy it, but then I thought I could tie it to my backpack and at least then Paul could find me easier if I fell into a crevasse or got buried in mud. Ha ha. But really, those purple eyes are hard to miss, and as it sits near my cot, it looks like it's staring at me. It was hard to say no to the kid with his dirty face and his quiet, persistent smile. These kids will try to sell you anything. They're very enterprising. More enterprising than Margaret's kids, that's for damn sure. The thought of Christmas coming up makes me ill. Jesse and Sam just seem to expect a mound of presents as their due. One more reason to hide in the mountains another couple of weeks. Although I did buy Jesse and Margaret necklaces today from the vendors catering to the festival crowd, they were cheap and they're light enough to haul home in the pack. Every ounce counts. Jesse's is a smoky, swirling golden stone set in hand-wrought silver. It'll look pretty with her eyes. Margaret's is a clear pool of garnet, red like a pomegranate seed, or blood. Really pretty. So pretty, maybe I'll keep it. Anyway, the Nepalese kids. We always buy our Coca-Cola off the Nepalese kids. No matter where we are, no matter if the whole town consists of a chicken shed and one lone dude stooping a yak, there's some runny-nosed four-year-old trying to sell you a Coke. Who knew there was so much Coke in Nepal? I'd like to see Jesse and Sam up here in the freezing mountains hawking coke to foreign devils. All the backpackers buy it because the water is sketchy, not because we like coke. I'm getting sick of coke, I have to say. But it tastes different than back home. There's a metallic clang when it hits the tongue, something harsh and satisfying, different than the syrup that slides down the throat back home. I reread Margaret's letter. It was very cheerful, like nothing was wrong. I feel annoyed. I'm in Nepal. I don't need a cheerful letter. I need another pair of sock liners. I need something to drink besides coke. I need my climbing partners to get up off their cots and move on to Bagar Chop and stop eating rotten chili chicken on the trail. I don't need a cheerful letter asking me when I'm coming home. Now it's later and I'm riding by flashlight. There was this kind of odd firelit ceremony in the darkness tonight in the middle of town where Princess Sita and Ram made another appearance. They walked slowly around the fire while people threw fragrant plants into it, making the air spicy and thick, kind of narcotic. Sita looked even more queenly, rigid and graceful, draped in shimmering gold, rich liquid crimson, going through these stylized motions of a dance they've probably been enacting together for 2,000 years. Sita is the model of the ideal Hindu woman, David told me. He felt strong enough to come out and look for a little while. She is dignified and remotely beautiful, a woman incomparably suitable to be the bride of Ram, the most popular of the incarnations of Vishnu. Vishnu, destroyer and creator. I still feel lightheaded from the smoke of that herbal fire, all the images, the colors of the day streaming through my head. Now I've got to sleep. December 11th, dawn. Terrible dream. Woke up soaked with sweat. Margaret and me sitting and talking. Where? Can't tell. The mountain? There's fire around us. A huge wall closing in, but we're sitting calmly in the middle, still. I'm snide, sarcastic, telling her I don't care about the goddamn fire. It's nothing to do with me. It's hot. I can see her sweating. She's scared, pleading with me.
Let's go, let's go!
The kites with the swirling purple eyes are above us, darting in the wind from the fire. There's no strings attached, though. They're flying themselves. They scare me. I'm not going anywhere, I insist meanly. But the fire gets closer. It's licking at me. It roars and it sucks the wind out of my lungs. I can still feel the searing in my throat. I'm so angry. So angry. This is not my problem. I shouldn't have to decide what to do. I'm not taking responsibility for this. I notice Margaret is wearing these crimson robes like Sita, gold thread and yellow flowers. I want to slap her, stupid cow, meditating in a fire. She stands up, and now she's calm.
Take it. Take it and live. I'm giving it to you.
She holds out her arms. The fire licks at her crimson robe and the wind makes her dark hair fly around her face. She stares at me. She's holding out the necklace I bought for her, the pomegranate seed, almost dripping with liquid color in this red, red light. Damn her! How dare she offer me a way out? She always has to be stronger, to make the decision. To hell with her! I push her down hard and tear the necklace out of her hand. The metal tears her hand as I yank it, breaking the chain and making thick blood drip from her palm. She just stares at me so sadly I can't look. But as soon as the necklace is in my hand, it fills me with energy, so much power, I feel like I'm 3 stories tall, looking down on a pitiful fire and her laying there. I don't care about either anymore, and I walk right through the fire and down the mountain. Now it's later. We're finally on the trail to Bagar Chop. David and Paul are lagging a little, but doing okay. I'm resting now, waiting for them to catch up. It's raining lightly, but not too bad. Not like this morning. My socks are only a little wet. It's taken me all morning to get the taste of that terrible dream out of my head. God, the altitude and weird smoke from the fire last night. God knows what. It must be getting to me. We're only a day late. We're going to be okay. The kite is still on my pack. I fixed it there pretty well, and it's so light I can barely feel it. The rain made the collar run a little, but not too bad. I'll give it to some kid before I get on the Pokhara bus back to Kathmandu. I had an idea to give it to Sam, but I can only carry so much on the plane ride home. It's too fragile to transport anyway, I think. Too bad. Tonight, Bagar Chop, and man, are my feet excited. I hear they have some natural hot springs there. I can't wait. December 12th. We're in Dharapani, a tiny, almost nothing of a town, a kilometer or so from Bagar Chop. It's raining again. Bagar Chop is no more. When we showed up there yesterday evening, they were pulling bodies out of the mud as fast as they could. People and livestock, men, women, and children. We just sat on our packs and watched, numb, as people from Dharapani and other towns used yaks to pull the last of the residents of Bagar Chop and all their worldly possessions out of the mud. Those weird green jays perched on the edge of the devastation tried to scavenge for grisly morsels. The only people who survived the avalanche were a few young yak shepherds up on the mountain. Everyone else was down in the village, celebrating the marriage of Ram and Sita. They pulled out two Australian backpackers too, a 40-something-year-old couple traveling on their anniversary, staying in the hostel. Then they pulled out a garland of yellow flowers like Sita was wearing in Changji. I suddenly didn't feel well. I went and sat down, away from the crying and the shouting, and repacked my pack, put the presents in there better. David and Paul are in a kind of shock, I think. Paul kept giggling.
Good thing for that rancid chicken, eh?
Looks pretty pale there. There's nothing to do now but push on from Dharapani until we can get to the bus in Pokhara. I don't really feel it anymore, though, like the wind was knocked out of me. I found a little boy to give the kite to this morning. I figured after seeing Bagar Chop that nothing would help if the mountain chose to take me out. I'm not sure if I'll stay in Kathmandu or not. I think David and Paul are going to head home to their families. Maybe I'll send Margaret a letter when we get to Pokhara.
I can't die. This has been the Sudden Radio Project for August 2007. Thank you very much for listening. Contributors to tonight's show have been Barbara Genovese, James Lawrence, Alexander Lumiere, Orion Gray, Randall Howington, Sharon Mann, Michelle May, Shasha Sassone, Drew Berrios, Todd Greblow, and Daniel Flessis. The Sudden Radio Project will return on September 24th. In the meantime, tune into Radio Theater every Monday from 11 p.m. to midnight on KBOO's Radio Theater Hour, featuring such diverse and exciting programs as The Ubu Hour, The Listeners, and Gremlin Time. You can enjoy previous editions of The Sudden Radio Project by logging on to www.kboo.fm and searching the KBOO program archives. Again, thank you for listening, and good night.
I take that nice backup Mr. Sarge offered you, dear.
Ma, let me do my job.
Did you read the poop perp? Fuck.
Yeah, just do it. You know, really get into it.
Well, as much as one can get into poop perps.
You got kind of
poop
together,
perps,
right?
A Quinn perps. Martin production. In
what?
Tonight's episode.
Stool pigeon.
KBOO Portland.
Oh.
Hey.
Hey. Oh.
Oh, wow. All right.
We're having a heat wave here in the studio.
That's all right.
It'll warm me up for the show tonight.
For that wacky cha-cha. Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, some say it's the tacky cha-cha. But I never did. I didn't believe it was.
I think it's the tongue-in-cheeky cha-cha club.
Don't you? I know you do. You understand.
I know you do. You're right. That's right, you.
You, right there. You. Or they're whacked out, blacked out, jacked out, tracked out, clacked out, blacked out, blacked out, blacked out.
As I climb into the big chair so we can be here now, at the Tiki Cha-Cha Club. Taking you to faraway places and bringing them home to you, right here in the studio. From the corner of Calicala Boulevard and Bourbon Street, in a little Spanish village, a small discotheque on the Isle of Capri.